Hello and welcome to Webinars Unfiltered by Workast. I'm Natalie and today I am joined by Rachel and Claire who've been with me before. So welcome back and thank you for joining me. So this podcast is where we discuss all things webinars completely unfiltered. We're not peddling Workast here. We're purely pulling on our collective experience within marketing, sales, account management and how we can help you potentially solve your webinar problems, any kind of issues you may have, any internal battles you have with your team on how to develop these. I thought we would normally take a different take for this one. Don't know why I said normally there, but this is unfiltered and that isn't going to be cut out. So what I was trying to say was normally we take a question from the public or something we find online and we'll answer that. So if you go back and look at our previous podcasts, you'll see things like how do you run your first webinar? How do I get more registrations? But I thought we could have a little bit of fun with this one. And we're bringing in AI. And you'll both be happy to know, or maybe a little bit scared. I've asked ChatGPT to search the web, maybe a little bit on Reddit, to give us the most controversial statements it has about webinars. Are you quaking in your boots yet?
Scary.
I know, especially for what we do. But I thought this would be quite good for us to tackle just because, as we all know, pre-2020, let's just go back a little bit, pre-2020 webinars were a little
bit... what is a webinar, not a how can I use a webinar. It was a what is a webinar.
Yes.
I think me and Claire are little veterans at this point now in the world of webinars.
Rachel, don't call us old. That's implying something I don't like.
Old, and then veteran as in...
Experienced, knowledgeable. They're better words. Yeah,
knowledge.
I agree, Rachel.
So we go from what is a webinar to 2020, everyone under the sun using webinars because of the pandemic, in-person events stop, everything moves online. Now, I know everyone's sick of talking about that over the past year, so we're going to skip over that one really quickly. So we're looking at where we're sitting now, and there is a big question mark, I would say, in our industry. And in marketing, sales, do webinars still have a purpose? And I think the title of this podcast is essentially like, are they still worth it? Is there much point doing them? Yeah. So let's take a little look to see what ChatGPT has come up with for us in terms of controversial statements at the moment around the subject of are they worth it? So shall we get kicked off with the first one?
Let's go.
Okay. So the first one is, are webinars redundant if the same content could be sent in a slide deck? What do we think?
Interesting. I have a lot in my head to do with this question. So I think there's a few things that you have to consider when you are answering and thinking about this question. From my perspective anyway, the reason being is because no matter what your content is, you have to remember that people take content and information in different ways. Some people are visual learners, some people are tangible learners. So you do have to bear that in mind when you are considering doing webinars, because it is a certain format of information delivery. I think that me being a visual learner, webinars are definitely a helpful thing for me, depending on what the topic actually is. I'll shut up for a second, Claire. I'll pass that on to you because I've got more thoughts, but I'll just...
I completely agree with that. And I do think I'm visual again, but there's lots of people who will are more audible are more kind of... I like the interactive. I like being able to see and people talking at the same time. There's other people who can just read and see all of things. And I suppose the question was, if you're using a slide deck and things like that, how do you make that more dynamic to enable everybody who has the different intake styles and maybe to retain that? Interesting, fun, and so that it's going to keep, because there's no point doing a webinar just for the sake of it. Because this is people's time. It's very precious, the time that they have. So it is about making sure that they know that if they turn up and they're going to set aside 45 minutes, that this is going to be valuable for them and they're going to get something from it. They're going to get takeaways. It's going to improve their job role or whatever it is that they're needing. And back to Natalie's point, will it help them to maybe solve a problem or a challenge? And I think there's things that you can do within webinars that you can't do in other formats. So so just sending a slide deck is not going to be able to do that. Yeah. So you do need to build upon the different formats.
Mm-hmm. I think webinars can be multifaceted as well, because when you, depending on obviously how the company is presenting their webinar and what are they using to present that webinar, dictates or can help you decide what other information you can give at the same time. And by that I mean you're delivering a webinar, so it's a visual. Yes, you're presenting, potentially you are presenting a slide deck, but alongside of that slide deck you're also having a conversation. And sometimes, especially if it's not scripted, on the hoof you think of things that can be more valuable because of the conversation that you're having with another speaker or presenter. It can derive thoughts on the spot and new information, and that's how you can cultivate a more valuable experience to your audience and they can get a better takeaways. And I think as well, depending on how, and I guess it comes with practice as well, but yes, you're recording and broadcasting a live webinar, but depending on how you speak potentially alongside of a slide deck, it can also then be converted into an audio podcast afterwards if you wanted to. And you can also provide the slide deck as a downloadable resource to your audience as well. So if they decide that they're not enjoying the visuals, but they just want to be able to look at the slide and take information in that way, then they can. If they want to listen to it at a later time, then they can. But if they are enjoying the sense of urgency of having that live broadcast there and then as well, for some people, they might also enjoy that. And then again, because there's a lot of cases with the modern platforms that you've got, you can then derive transcripts and then you can derive blogs. So the amount of content that you can drive from a webinar is almost unlimited. So I don't think webinars are redundant because of what you can get from them during and after.
Mm-hmm. I think that you've both made really good points. And I think one of the key things here is that webinars have evolved away from being purely a presentation.
Yes.
That may have been the case 5 years ago. Yeah. But if you are still doing, unless I think for very specific use cases where you're delivering data or a case study, something like that, mm-hmm. I think if you're relying purely on a slide deck in a mm-hmm. webinar, I think your audience may feel that way, being like, why didn't you just send me this? This didn't need to be that way.
Yeah.
And I think saying that as well, like what you've both said, how do people want to digest that content? Think about how your audience wants to digest the content that you're giving them. Mm-hmm.
You could also flip it and say, are in-person events redundant if a slide deck could be just shared? So it's thinking about it from that perspective as well, because you go to an in-person event to have the in-person interaction. You go to a webinar to have that online interaction and the sense of urgency of a live broadcast as well. If you choose to watch live, you know, there's also on-demand availability in semi-live. But I think there's definitely, for sure, I don't think they're redundant.
Yeah, and on that point, Rachel, they're just so much more accessible to everybody. So there will be people who have additional requirements who are a physical event, they might not be able to see the content well, they might not be able to hear the content well, where with technology, there are so many ways that you can provide greater access to the content. And just as a note, there is some laws coming in or starting in June this year all around European accessibility and how that is provided. So that's another better way to be able to provide the content to everybody.
I agree.
I think you both make great points there. So collectively we're saying they're not redundant.
Nope.
I think you just have to be a bit more creative with how you use them.
Yes.
To either get the content, like additional content from it, make it more accessible for people. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that. I love both of them. Okay. Are we ready for the second one?
Yes.
Okay. Right. Our webinar secretly. Sorry, I'm laughing because of the secretly. Our webinar. Our most webinars secretly just long sales pitches.
No.
Ooh, straight in with a no.
I'm going to say no.
Continue, Rachel.
Yeah. I completely agree with Rachel. Sales pitchers will turn off an audience and they will not come back and rewatch that content. Yeah. Where if you are doing it correctly, you will find repeat visits to wider content. And it's definitely, I believe, more of kind of educational thought leadership. They are the most successful types of webinars. You get higher engagement, you get higher conversion rates, and longevity.
Be smart as well if you are going to use webinars as part of your sales process. And when I say be smart, you do not want to just pitch your product. You want to do you either want to pre-record the webinar to make sure that your product and or service look shiny first of all, but equally you can do it live. But what I would say is you need to make sure that if you do a webinar that is essentially selling a product, that you're speaking to the audience that is on that webinar. Now, it depends on if you have a niche market already or if you have a product that can potentially suit different industries, different personas. It might be worth making sure that that specific webinar is catered to a particular persona and a particular industry, because it means that you will speak to their problems and you will be providing solutions in that webinar for them. That means that it will be a valuable demo / information webinar on your product, and it will land correctly with them, and they won't just feel like you're selling them something that is of no interest to them at all. What you'll see is that the people that attend the webinars will then convert as leads to potential MQLs, to SQLs, to opportunities. Your conversion rates will improve more. So if you are going to use webinars for sales pitches, don't do it as a sales pitch, do it as a value add approach to that for your audience. And so there's definitely a place for webinars within sales, a sales cycle, but just be smart in how you do it. Don't blanket the approach. You need to make sure that the webinar on your product and service is going to still provide value to that person. But to clear your point as well, webinars do not just solely fit for sales pitches. They're so good for CPD accreditations, all of that, with the amount of associations that use webinars for policy dissemination, for new legislations within governments and organizations. All of that is so important, and the best thing about webinars is that you can disseminate that information to a large audience very quickly. It's not something you can do as easily as in an in-person event, although they naturally have their place as well. But webinars are so much more than just sales pitches for products and services. They're really valuable when it comes to education and spreading information.
I think the only exception I can find when it would be a sales pitch is if a company is actively using webinars to do demos of their product. Yeah. And I think that should probably be the only exception. But in that case, as like an audience member, you should know that going in. Like it should say product demo of blah, blah, blah. And in that case, they are very high intent. Like that should, like you were saying, that's what the purpose of that webinar is. Yeah. Out with that, I think what you've both said is really clear. They should be about adding value. It should be about educating people and answering any questions they have around certain topics.
And you can also get ahead of the grain with that upon registration, because you can ask people on your registration pages what people want to find out, what information they want from the webinar that you're promoting. So if you ask that on the at point of registration, that allows you and gives you time to make sure that the content that you create for the webinar, whether it's live or pre-recorded, semi-live, you can ensure that you're hitting the right message when you're doing the content.
It's all about personalization, isn't it? And making sure that, again, the valuable time is being well spent. Yes, I totally are useful within the lead generation and the sales process, but it's, again, how you do it and when you do it.
Great. Okay, I feel like we're knocking these down. I feel bad. I feel like I should have asked for harder ones. We could do that at the end if we have time. Okay, So number three, and this is interesting for us considering our setup right now, yeah. Has remote work led to lower production value and engagement in webinars?
Oh, that's an interesting question.
It's very opinion led.
If I can come in, I think when you are utilizing for a business and you're utilizing a meeting tool, a lot of them don't allow for your branding or your personalization. So if you are using a platform that allows you to continue your brand journey, can certainly help with the video production. And I think everybody's jumped on and they've done the webcams and they've learned through COVID how to do the right backgrounds, don't have you washing in the back and things like that. It's great because we're informal, we're all at home today. But you still need to think like you would on a physical event, that you've got the right lighting, you've got all of that in place. So I think people have got fatigue potentially when they've seen that unprofessional setup. But if they've got the speakers who are being professional, they're doing their content, you've got the right environment, but also mixing it with different types of content. We're just at the moment just doing it almost like a panel based discussion. We're just talking and it's great. It's interactive. It's lovely. But it may be useful to use other things, like have you got some really great pre-canned videos that you can play out within your event? And can you change the layout like you would on BBC News? You can change the camera views and things like that. And that's what your audience are expecting, that more higher quality, instead of everybody just being in a tile view. If you've got that, shame we should have prepared more and we could
have. Do you want me to switch layout now?
Yes, change the layout.
How do we change the layout? What do we feel like? Okay, over to you, Claire, and you should come up to the...
So then you've got that... focus as well. So, and there's other things that you can do. So I think as long as you're mixing the production and the environment that your audience are in, it gives more of that professional feel opposed to potentially the amateur feel that we may have had during kind of like the COVID days. So
it is an interesting question as well, because it can be a blanket question across everything too, because obviously the question is, has remote work led to lower production value and engagement? And if that would be applicable to webinars, then it will be applicable to everyone's work across the board, not just webinars. It will be across everyone's remit. So I would disagree, in my opinion, that I don't think remote work has led to lower production value and engagement. Don't get me wrong, obviously out with this conversation, there are a lot of factors that can contribute to things like post-COVID burnout, because when people are working from home, they feel like they may need to work even harder because it's not visible as much as being in an office that you are working hard.
Yeah.
So it can actually have the opposite effect. But when it comes to webinars specifically, I think that the fact that webinars rose in popularity because of the pandemic, I think allowed people to become in tune with what was possible out there. And being in sales myself, I've seen the conversation change from what is a webinar, what is a webinar, tell me what a webinar is, to now what can I do to make my webinar more exciting? And that's a question that I get asked a lot. So what you suggested, Claire, all the different things that you can do with webinars now is super, super helpful. So I think that it's definitely not led to a lower production value and engagement. It is promoting questions from people to ask, what more can I do? Because they don't just want to stay stagnant and just have tile-based webinars where everything looks a little bit, without mentioning very popular platforms that people tend to use for webinars that aren't purposely built for webinars. They can get a little bit fatiguey. If you want to make sure that you don't fall down the cracks of lower production and value and engagement, you just need to look across the market and see what's out there and give things a little bit of a test. But I think remote work has actually potentially spurred people on to do things better because they're not in an office with people all of the time. it is swings and roundabouts, don't get me wrong. I think some people will, some companies will have been victim to fatigue and for people to just slip through the net because they're not in an office and therefore they're not being watched. But I think on the whole, it's actually brought a lot of teams and companies together to get more excited about webinars.
No, I agree on that. A really great point as well.
Mm-hmm. A bit of a ramble.
No, I think what you both said is great, because I think what I'm thinking when I read this question again is what I think everyone has a different perception of what professional means. I think professional will be different to each industry. Mm-hmm. For example, if you're in an industry where, say, for example, that's very used to, say, a corporate style, then you'll probably expect everything to be very but that's always not the case either. I would say that sometimes that can also be very relaxed.
And is that so, that section of the question then, that is what makes a webinar feel professional versus amateur?
Yes.
I hear you. Because again, it depends on the format as well, because we will have the likes of pharmaceutical clients and financial clients who do want to have that professional look and feel. And then you also have the clients, or you have all clients that will want to have a level of profession, but then a level of amateur as well.
Like, where's that baseline?
Exactly. Yeah. And I guess what we're doing right now is probably seen as a little bit amateur in terms of the fact that it's not all guns blazing. We're just having a chat. It's almost like a panel discussion.
Yeah. But I think amateur is more about actually, you know, the setup's not right, you've got poor audio quality because you haven't got that in place. So that's more, and if you're unprepared, with a presentation
as well.
Yeah. So I think that's more the amateur side of things than, because you can have some really great panel based discussions, which are highly professional, because if you've got great speakers and they're going, and there's great content, and that content's personalized, going back to what you've said, Rachel, about actually to what your audience are wanting to hear, because you've prepared the audience beforehand and you've asked what they want. That is the professional side of things. The amateur is if you haven't done that and you don't go in that way.
Mm-hmm. And I guess amateur as well can also be seen as just a starter. So I think it's the connotations of the word amateur as well, isn't it?
Yeah. Because
amateur might not be that they don't know what they're doing. It's just they're amateur in the field. They've just started in the field, but they may actually have done a full degree on it. So you just don't.
I think everyone starts somewhere, and I think you can only get better with practice and surrounding yourself with people who know more than you.
Yeah.
I think. I know that's quite a common saying. If you're the smartest in the room, you're in the wrong room. I tend to agree. Like, you should be able to learn where you are, and everyone starts somewhere.
Yeah, I agree.
So, you can only go up from there. Learn from your mistakes, people. Learn from your mistakes. okay, right. We'll move on to the next question, and it may be the final one, just keeping an eye on the time. This one is definitely more of an all-rounder. It's not really a question. It's more of an opinion, I guess. Are webinars overhyped, or are they here to stay? I guess more of a summary of everything that we've just said.
Mm-hmm. I would say stay for sure. The reason why I say stay is because there's so much more that you can do with webinars, and they are so much there is a lot of development going on within the industry right now, particularly with the AI in the mix now too. They're definitely here to stay. They're part of they should be part of especially every marketer's toolkit. But that also, when I say a marketer, I also mean it should be part of an internal comms team's toolkit. Mm-hmm. It should be part of a university's toolkit when it comes to open days, etc. They should even be part of a sales team's kit to promote reasons why people should obviously use products or services, leaning into what we said previously. Claire, what's your thought?
No, I believe completely to stay as long as you evolve them. I think lots of people in the past have thought webinar, that is a live event. Mm-hmm. But actually, webinars are all sorts of things. They, like Natalie, you talked about pre-recording content earlier on. So about having that and simulating that. So that is great for demos, for example. So you've got like your leads coming in, you want them to go to a nice recorded demo and then go, right, that's great, I want to learn more. So you've got, you're pushing them through that whole sales channel, or it could be immersive, they're used for the internal comms. As long as you are making sure that you're adapting the way and it's a different type, the content that you want, you're pushing it out in different formats, that keeps your audience engaged. And as long as you are making sure that your audience feel immersed, are getting the right outcome from it.
Yeah.
But, and again, it's really valuable ways to get some brilliant data. And then what you do with that data is the important thing. There's so many tools out there which will integrate with your webinar platforms that then will push your audience down the right routes, automated routes, but also down to the making sure that they're getting to the right person that they want to speak to or the right message that you want to give out. So definitely here to stay as long as you make advantage all the different formats and the data that are coming from it.
Yeah, I 100% agree with the data. That was going to be what I was going to say next in terms of the data. The reason being as well, and for the exact reasons that you've just said in terms of the integrations, Claire, but also it's such a good way to understand behavior of your target audience, because you can find out things like how long should your webinars be, when do people tend to log out of your webinars. Then you can also see the types of questions that come through. You can use the Q&A in the polling functions to do research, because you have a live audience there and it quite literally is capturing and recording their responses. And then even things like, I always talk to my clients about this, but if you have a platform that allows you to provide resources for them to access during the broadcast, if you are able to, on that platform, see which resources have been clicked on, you can then find out which resources you should probably make more of in the future. So with those resources, have you had a web link available, a PDF, an information pack, is a Word document? Which one is being clicked on the most? If they're not interested in the Word document, the download or the PDF, and they just want websites, maybe don't worry about investing your time and efforts in those Word documents and PDFs. They're obviously not the type of, then it's not the format that people want to take information in. Just plow your efforts in a really advancing the web links with the information. It's about making your work lean but effective, and it's that information that you can take from them as well. It's not just about the live broadcast and the content that you're providing during the broadcast. It is about the data that you can get from it as well, which can feed into how you operate as a team. There's so much you can do. we're just so passionate about this. But there is just so much you can do, isn't there? And it's nice when we speak to different clients about it, because they give us ideas, but we can give them ideas as well. And this is how our platform evolves, because we like to listen to what people want and what they're after.
I want to catch on to that word evolve you just used there, because I think answering the question from my perspective, I'd say that they're here to stay, but they have to continually be evolving. Like, you can't keep them the same forever. Otherwise, it's just going to permanently be stagnant. It'll get dusty. That's when you'll have these questions arise, probably internally, if you're running them, being like, are they worth doing? Like, why are we putting funding into this? But if you're continually changing them internally, here we always like to talk about experiments, like experiment with them, see what works. And I think that's how you can make them work for you. Because I'd say it definitely isn't a one size fits all.
They allow you to pivot very quickly. You can't pivot all that quickly with in-person events because you have restrictions, whereas with webinars you can very much change your content quickly. You can also change registrations on the Hoof, even if you've done a if you've launched your registration page but you may not be getting quite the registration numbers that you want, that's fine. Just quickly change the overview text, add a little bit more to the overview text if you want, reformat the agenda just to make it a little bit more appealing. Don't think that it's that webinars have to stay stagnant, I guess, once you've launched them, by any means. And don't think, and I keep on saying this, but don't think webinars are about the webinar and the live broadcast itself. It encompasses everything else around it, right from registration all the way to the on-demand publishing of it as well.
Yeah, and again, they can be used not as an item on their own. So, for example, webinars are a really great way to actually drive attendance to sign up for your physical events. So, and to sign up for web portals and subscriptions. So, they are part of your internal and external communication program that will help support your other programs that you are wanting to push and deliver. So definitely here to stay, but they need to be evolved and part of the, I don't know, I can't think of the word, atmosphere.
Overall strategy.
That's it. Thank you.
Yeah. I think webinars complement everything else as well, a bit like everything else complements a webinar. I think people do sometimes get stuck in a rut of thinking that different methods of information delivery competition against each other, and they're not. What you've just said there, Claire, in terms of webinars being really good to talk about an upcoming physical event, they're also really good to round up a physical event afterwards as well. And you can also generate new leads through things like providing exclusive content on that webinar that you may not have give out during a physical event, and vice versa. So there's lots you can do.
And also the physical event can also be a webinar, because you can film it and stream it. So there you go. Combine everything.
Exactly. If you can't afford a big, massive venue, it is fine. Get yourself a webinar platform. Happy days.
Happy days. Here to stay, by the sounds of it.
Right. I'm going to bring us all back for a little thank you for you both joining me again. I think we've answered everything pretty well, I would say. That's me being completely biased, but also
Our audience might have different thoughts, but
if they do, honestly, let us know, because I think I'd be really interested to hear other people's thoughts on this, because I think everyone's they'll either be similar to ours or completely different, and I welcome the controversy.
Yes, I agree.
Totally.
Well, that's a wrap for episode 6. Can you believe it? Episode 6. Oh my God. Woo. So we will be back for episode 7 in the coming months. We'll have a little look around for some topics, and I will probably invite you both again. So get it in your calendars.
That would be lovely. I mean, again, looking for topics, if our audience would like to suggest some topics of things that they would like to challenge us with.
Maybe. Challenge. Oh my God, I love that.
Sure. Might even be this side, but somewhere.
Perfect. Okay, well, thank you both. I hope everyone that joined us today has found this useful as well, and as Claire said, Rachel, put some questions for us. If not, we'll come up with a topic for you. Okay, thank you very much, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.
See you next time.
Thanks.
Bye.